This is BI Radio.
All human beings need to know that the thing I do at work matters to someone and improves their world.
We want to use the balanced scorecard to communicate those strategic objectives and the strategic direction of the company. We've always looked at it as a communication tool.
Most organizations already have a strategy. Over 80% of strategies fail. They fail because they're not executed.
Hi there, and welcome to BI Radio. I'm Ken Seeley. On the show today, metrics, measurement, and miserable jobs. Kelsey Howarth takes a trip to the Balanced Scorecard Hall of Fame. Lisa LaRochelle learns the difference between scorecards and dashboards. But first up, three signs that you have a miserable job. Kelsey Howarth learns from Patrick Lencioni why measurement makes the difference between work that's miserable and work that's meaningful.
Hi, I'm Kelsey Howarth. What's the difference between a bad job and a miserable one? Well, there's no better person to ask than Patrick Lencioni. Patrick is founder and president of The Table Group, a specialized management consulting firm focused on organizational health. He is a passionate speaker, trusted consultant, and the author of 8 best-selling books, including The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, Silos, Politics, and Turf Wars, and Death by Meeting. Here, he and I discuss his book, The 3 Signs You Have a Miserable Job, and ways companies can make any job more rewarding and fulfilling. Hi, Patrick. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be here.
I was reading recently that in the average company, about 25% of the workforce is completely disengaged from their job. Do you think companies are really aware of the financial impact of this lack of job satisfaction?
You know, they're probably not completely aware of it, or they probably don't realize the depths of it. But I think most importantly, they just assume it's inevitable and that it's a part of human nature for people not to like their jobs. And when they see companies that actually don't have this problem, that overcome this, they're confused by it, and oftentimes they resent them. They kind of don't even want to talk about it. Rather than looking at it and saying, what is it that they're doing that maybe we should do, they just are confused and often resent that competitor in the industry. So I think the biggest problem is we do underestimate the impact, but we also just don't think that it's possible to overcome.
You read about companies that block employee access to sites like Facebook or MySpace
right.
to eliminate time wasting in the workplace. Why are businesses so reluctant to address root causes?
You know, I think that when we say businesses are reluctant to, I think what we have to say is it's really senior leaders, senior management that's reluctant to. And I think their reluctance comes from the fact that they realize that they have to look at themselves. I mean, it's just a lot easier to say, we have a problem with employee engagement. The real issue starts at the top of an organization. And the question is, are the senior managers, the leaders of the organization, doing the things for their direct reports and then creating a culture where they demand that others do it for their people that can bring about true employee engagement and satisfaction? And that's a human issue. I mean, nobody likes to think that maybe they're the issue. But the truth is, any company where employees are not satisfied or engaged, ultimately, it goes back to the senior executive team.
Now, you write that a miserable job is not the same as a bad job. How are they different? And what are the 3 signs of a miserable job?
Well, a bad job really depends on who's... It really lies in the eyes of the beholder. I mean, one person's bad job can be another person's dream job. You know, some people think that working in the Forestry Service would be an awful thing. Some people live for that. Another person would think that being a management consultant or doing financial consulting would be miserable. Other people, that's the dream job they've always had. So when we say so-and-so has a bad job, it's almost like that TV show called Dirty Jobs. You know, some of those people don't seem unhappy in their jobs, even though others would say, well, that's a bad job. But they're like, no, I get to be outdoors, or I get to do this, or I like this. So good or bad really depends on the person. Job misery, though, is universal. Because a miserable job runs the gamut. It doesn't matter what you're doing, how much you're getting paid. A miserable job is one where you're experiencing the three signs of a miserable job, which are, first of all, where you feel anonymous, where you feel like the person you work for is not interested in you as a person, doesn't know what's going on in your life and in your world, and has no connection to you as on an individual basis. No matter what you do for a living, no matter what level you are in a company, how much money you get paid, how sexy your job seems, if you know that the person you're working for is disinterested in you as a person, it's impossible to love your work. The second sign of a miserable job is irrelevance. And that's when you don't see how your job, the work you do, impacts someone, anyone, in any sort of meaningful way in their life. All human beings need to know that the thing I do at work matters to someone and improves their world, whether in a small or a large way. So when a person says, I really don't see how the world would be any different and if anybody would care if I really did this, that's another sign of a miserable job. And that hits people at all different kinds of jobs. Finally, the last sign of a miserable job is what I call immeasurement. And that is when you have no way to measure or gauge for yourself whether or not you're succeeding, but you're dependent on someone to tell you if they're approving of you. All human beings need to know, need to have some way to objectively assess a situation and say, I'm having a good day or a good week or a good month or I'm doing a good job because I see this evidence of it. If we don't have that, we're completely dependent on other people's opinions. So with anonymity, irrelevance, and immeasurement, no matter what you do, misery follows.
IBM Cognos software helps companies unite data and create meaningful reports, scorecards, analysis, dashboards, and more. So we're big fans of the you can't manage what you can't measure concept. Why is measurability so important?
You know, it's one of those things we've come to accept over the years, and I do believe things don't improve if you don't measure them. But there's a human reason for that as well, and that is that if a human being does not have a way to objectively assess whether or not they're actually accomplishing what they're supposed to be accomplishing, especially as that accomplishment impacts their relevance, then they're left to rely on someone else's subjective opinion about whether they're doing a good job or not. You know, jobs that don't have this problem are salespeople and professional athletes generally, interestingly enough, because they have these built-in measures. A professional athlete, at the end of the day, their team either wins or loses, and then they can look at their statistics and say, how did I do? Did I score enough points? Did I gain enough yards? Did I get enough hits? Whatever it is. A salesperson has this wonderful thing called a quota, and they always know where they stand. And that allows them not to think that someone's going to come along and say, gee, I don't really like the way you're doing this. I don't think you're doing a good job. I think you should feel bad about your performance, because they're going to look and say, listen, it says right here I'm doing a good job or a bad job. So it gives them the power for assessing for themselves. Without that, you feel like you're a slave to your manager's mood, opinion, or their subjective assessment that day.
We find sometimes that employees can be a little nervous about workplace measurement. They fear it will be used as a very big stick. How would you confront the fear of measurability?
We're talking about just objectifying things so that it's less subjective, but allows you to really look at the bigger picture. You see this all the time. Companies have everybody write MBOs at the beginning of the quarter of the year. Well, what happens is people end up managing themselves just toward those MBOs so they can justify their bonus. When in fact, what's better is if there's a way for employees and managers to sit down and regularly talk about what they need to be accomplishing and putting that in just objective enough terms that they can see if they're succeeding, so that it doesn't come down to, are you going to catch me on one technicality? But on the other end, it doesn't come down to, do you like me and do you think that you want to keep me around?
Patrick, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
For more information on Patrick Lencioni, including details on his new book, The Three Big Questions for a Frantic Family, please visit the Table Group website at www.tablegroup.com.
Feeling the heat? Go from the hot seat to the driver's seat with IBM Cognos 8 V4, the latest release of the IBM Cognos Performance Management Platform. Inform, engage, and align your business users with new dynamic dashboards, dimension management, and many other innovations. Get into the driver's seat today. Visit Cognos.com/driver's seat. That's Cognos.com/driver's seat.
Interviews, insights, and opinions on performance management. You're listening to BI Radio.
Hi, I'm Lisa LaRochelle.
Brett Knowles is a longtime thought leader in the performance management space. He is the co-founder of the first balanced scorecard application, has developed numerous measurement concepts around intangible assets, and has served on countless editorial boards and conference constructs. Listen in as we discuss the difference between scorecards and dashboards, scorecarding best practices, and corporate strategy. Good afternoon, Brett.
Good afternoon, Lisa.
A lot of people confuse scorecards with dashboards. How does a scorecard differ from a dashboard?
Maybe the best way to explain that is to think of a dashboard in a car. When you go to your car, you come to the car with a whole bunch of knowledge about what your objectives are, why you're getting in the car, how to interpret the data that's in front of you. Imagine if you put a six-year-old in the dashboard of your car, they wouldn't be able to figure out what the dials are for. A dashboard expects that the user has a whole bunch of experience and knowledge about the objectives that they're bringing to the dashboard. And the purpose of the dashboard is to give you timely, moment-by-moment information that you overlay with this other knowledge you have in order to correctly manage the business at hand. A scorecard, on the other hand, overlays strategy on top of the data so that you can align yourself with the rest of the organization on how you interpret the data. Best example of that is if you think of the oil light on your car. When that oil light triggers on, you're supposed to stop the car. Now, that's what you're supposed to do on an ongoing basis, but now imagine your strategy is not to go to work, but now you're going to the hospital in an emergency situation. When that light triggers on, now what do? The strategy tells you, ignore that data. The objective is more important. So the strategy overlays how we interpret the data. That's what the scorecard brings to the table.
And what is a balanced scorecard?
The balanced is the key word of a balanced scorecard, of course. What we're trying to do is balance the organizational needs of today with those of the future. Often, organizations might make decisions to make quarter-end numbers or month-end numbers, which may sacrifice the longer-term viability of the business. We're trying to balance those short-term needs with the longer-term needs. Now, what that looks like is we often begin using metrics which are not financial. Indications of customer satisfaction like repeat business and spend and so forth become lead indicators to future activities and provide a balance to the scorecard or the data that we look at so we can see the longer-term impacts of these moment-to-moment decisions that we make.
And how long would it take to build that kind of a balanced, comprehensive view?
Well, there's two parts to that. The best way to build a scorecard is, in fact, to very quickly build a pilot scorecard that you'll then test drive and use in the organization. So to build the pilot can be quick. It's 5 days, usually. But now you release it to the organization. It may take 6 months for them to use it and refine it and make it better. Now, it turns out that that is a very effective strategy because not only does it allow everyone in the organization to participate in building the scorecard and making it better, it also drives deep ownership. So the short answer is it takes a week to build it and a year to mature it.
Are there things that are typically followed or adhered to create an effective scorecard for an organization?
Best practices around building scorecards centralize on three core issues. Number one, it's important that you get deep ownership. One of the problems that many organizations have is they build a scorecard with a small team, and when they release it to the organization, the ownership and the usage of it is quite low, because it's only owned by the small team. So best practice number one is build a quick pilot and release it to the whole organization so everyone can work on making it better. Second, take your existing strategy and use that as a starting point. Over 80% of strategies fail. And they fail, it turns out, not because they're not clever. They fail because they're not executed. In other words, a broken part of the process is not coming up with a strategy. It's making sure that we execute the strategy that's in place. Many times when people build a scorecard, they spend an inordinate amount of time trying to develop a new strategy. A better practice is to build the scorecard around the existing strategy and run with it for, say, 6 months, and then get together to have a strategy discussion now based on facts and data. Thirdly, you have to have a mix between financial and non-financial metrics. Now, most organizations have an abundance of financial measures. The challenge is many things don't reflect themselves very well in a financial measure. In fact, in the intangible asset world, human capital, customer capital, and structural capital, the metrics of dollars don't work. So we need a better mix of metrics that go into a balanced scorecard to give us a better view of current and future performance.
And where do you think most companies are in terms of the creation and implementation of scorecards? What do you think the market maturity is?
It's moved up significantly in the last decade. 10 years ago, most organizations weren't really familiar with what a scorecard was or why they would use it. Now, we very seldom go into organizations where they don't already have either experiments with scorecards underway or at least all the components already existing in the organization. The issue is most organizations have huge amounts of information, and now the issue is how do I cull out those core few indicators that tell me the big picture of what's happening in the organization. Most organizations already have a strategy. It just might not be top of mind. Most organizations have a good process and project mindset, but they haven't linked those processes and projects back to specific strategic objectives.
Are scorecards more prevalent in certain industries?
They're not prevalent in more industries. I would say, though, that they often start in either the IT function or the HR function. Those two are a shared service type environment where they have multiple customers with conflicting priorities. And by putting a scorecard in place, it better helps explain to them what is their customer value equation and what is the service level agreement they have with their customers and how do we measure for meeting those things. It also helps them make decisions across those departments to make sure that what they're doing is best aligned to the strategy in aid of those departments.
Let's talk a little bit about corporate strategy. You've been quoted as saying, if you can't fit your corporate strategy on a napkin, it's too complicated. Can most companies you work with do that?
Without exception, everyone can, if you use the right thoughtware to get to that approach. Here's the issue. With most organizations, the essence of the strategy is pretty straightforward. The dilemma we have is we try to describe too much detail of the strategy in the overall strategy map or top-level view. The overall strategy should be kept simple. The bottom line is this. If it's not top of mind, if the strategy is not simple enough that people could repeat it to you or draw it on a napkin, chances are it's not top of mind when they make decisions day to day.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you today, Brett. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For more information about scorecarding, see pm2.ca. That's pm2.ca. Thank you for joining me.
Got perspective? Cognos Performance Perspectives is the Cognos e-newsletter for business intelligence, enterprise planning, and performance management. It's your source for exclusive interviews, insights, and opinion on industry trends. It's a perspective unique to Cognos, one we think you'll enjoy. Get the newsletter and get a new perspective. Subscribe now at cognos.com/newsletter.
Insights on performance management from the people who shape the industry.
Hi, I'm Kelsey Howarth. In
In order to compete in a challenging economy, manufacturers must improve service levels, gain visibility into revenue and profitability performance, control costs, and better manage complex supply chains. Today, you're going to listen in as I speak with Mark Lack. Mark is the Planning and Financial Analysis Manager at Mueller, Inc., an industry leader in steel building and metal roofing solutions. Listen in as he shares how Cognos has helped the company quickly spot areas for improvement, stay firmly focused on goals, and effectively measure progress and profitability. You'll also hear why the company was recently named to the Balanced Scorecard Hall of Fame for executing strategy. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Could you tell us a little bit about Mueller?
Mueller is a steel building company. We sell and manufacture steel buildings and roofs and other metal building products in the southwestern part of the United States.
What were some of the central issues or pains before Cognos?
It was really taking the data that we had, and we were looking for a solution to take all of the data that we are now capturing and put it into a reportable format that was sensible to the organization, but was also fairly easy to use and also had a low overhead with the maintenance of the system.
What sort of metrics are you measuring when it pertains to steel building?
Well, the steel buildings are the products that we add value to that we sell to our customers. So around the products, you know, we look at are we selling complete projects? So we want to look at do we have customers that are buying pieces of their entire project from us, or they're buying their entire project from us? So we would want to look at the type of product people are buying, the type of project people are buying, and how those things come together. So analyzing that type of information, those are metrics that help us understand our business activity. In terms of other processes, they're fairly generic in the way the objective may be written. And when I say generic, they're companies are always going to need to improve quality. They're going to, you know, improve customer relationship. And we identify those processes that we have that we can glean information from that represent that objective. So we look to see, okay, in these processes, as they link to other customer outcomes, are they working? Do they give us an indication of the health of our business? Those are the type of things that we look at.
So your first BI implementation, where did you start?
We started with reporting. To go back a little bit, we have a balanced scorecard. That was the central management theme that we have of our strategic processes, from planning to reporting and analysis. To manage our strategic direction, we needed a software that's going to be able to do that. So we created a balanced scorecard, and we were looking for how can we, now we've got this balanced scorecard, how do we report it? Well, there are many companies that they do one thing. They may specialize in, okay, we have a great balanced scorecard reporting tool, or we have a great analysis tool, or we have a great reporting tool. But there wasn't anything that had all three. So that was very, very important that we had an architecture that we could manage all of these processes together, including planning. So we had a sort of an end-to-end system. Cognos really had that for us.
Your Balanced Scorecard has recently won a big award. You've been named to the Balanced Scorecard Hall of Fame for executing strategy. Now, what puts you at the cutting edge in terms of Balanced Scorecard implementations?
Well, the Balanced Scorecard, the things that are representative of what we've achieved are those of a strategy-focused organization. And those are the principles of defining your strategy, driving it through the organization, communicating the results to the organization, and using the Balanced Scorecard to manage strategic themes in order to meet your company's results. It started out a long time ago, the Balanced Scorecard, as a measurement system, but really the value that you get is the weaving of the Balanced Scorecard in your company's culture. And that's what we've done. The Balanced Scorecard is not a measurement tool, it's a communication tool. We use it to report results, but the results are important only as much as that we're getting value in approaching and completing our strategy. The problem that you have if it's just a measurement tool is that, you know, people can react to measures in ways that are not the way that you would want them maybe to react. So we want to use the balanced scorecard to communicate those strategic objectives and the strategic direction of the company so that everybody has a part and they can look and see what it is that is important for us to be doing. Whereas many people look at the metrics or as the balanced scorecard as maybe a measurement tool, we've always looked at it as a communication tool. We can let the people that are taking metal and manufacturing it and let them know these are our strategic priorities, and so that they understand why when they have processes that they have to implement, what they do to help affect the strategy of the organization. So it's the communication. You could just say, well, you need to do 15 parts per minute per hour per labor hour. That's a great metric that tells you at the end of the process, were you within the confines? That's great. But what's really important for us is to say, look, by implementing this process, we're going to have less errors, higher quality of the customer, they're going to buy more, there's more opportunity for you in this organization. That is the important thing that needs to be communicated to the employee, much more so than a metric that a finance guy such as myself has calculated that represents their good performance.
Can you speak to any time-saving, cost-saving, or just new insight that Cognos has given you?
Oh, absolutely. When we first went down the road of implementing a business intelligence, we were just looking for a reporting piece of software. By buying this system and solution the way that we did, I say we saved a year in report development time. And when I say a year, because there's a lot of back and forth that goes on. You know, it's like, is this the report you want? Is this the information? Oh, gosh, you know, I told you that, but we really needed this as well. So you go back and you add this piece of information. The performance applications had 90 to 95% of the information we needed right out of the box. So by having that, we could have built that because we knew where the data was. And we had experts within our own organization that could do that. But the value we got was an almost out-of-the-box solution. And once you put together an out-of-box solution, you know, a lot of people say, yeah, out of the box. I've seen out of the box. Really, this thing was out of the box. And it was when they said it was going to take about 30 days, they did it in about 20 days, 20 working days. So it was a very quick implementation. And we started getting value almost right away. You know, you go from having almost no data or very limited static data to now you have dynamic data in cubes and reporting, and you push it out to a larger audience. And when the value has been... It's really neat being in a meeting, and when somebody has something that in the past would have been either rhetorical or taken offline to go research again, we pull up the Cognos system and we basically ask the system because we have the data mapped, and we find out the answer to that question right away. You know, so we're able to very quickly respond to questions. You know, that in the past would be, well, gosh, I just don't know it. I don't know how we would get that information. Now, give me 5 minutes, and I'll have it for you. Mm-hmm. And which is a big difference from where we were.
For more information on why Mueller and thousands of manufacturers worldwide choose Cognos, please visit www.cognos.com/manufacturing.
Performance 2008 is your direct path to performance management expertise and the most important one-day event of the year for anyone who's using, supporting, or evaluating Cognos solutions. Get practical knowledge you can use right away. Meet product experts to learn how to increase the value of your current investments. Performance 2008 takes place in dozens of cities worldwide. Registration is free and it's open now. Get on the path at cognos.com/performance2008.
Well, that's a wrap. I'd like to thank our guest today. From the Table Group, Patrick Lencioni. From Performance Measurement and Management, Brett Knowles. And from Mueller Incorporated, Mark Lack. A note of thanks as well to our segment producers, Kelsey Howarth and Lisa LaRochelle. To our writer, Delaney Turner. And finally, to our head producer and audio engineer, Derek Schreiner. A reminder to check us out online at radiocognos.com, where you can listen to previous shows, download individual segments, and view the transcript of each broadcast. If you care to comment about anything you hear on the show, email us at biradio@ca.ibm.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Ken Seeley. We'll see you in about 6 weeks.
performance management you can listen to. This is BI Radio.